Sutra. The Kshatriya princes who are due to be anointed on the crowns of their heads will enjoy longer lives and good health, and they will be at ease and free from illnesses. Ananda, if the queens, the princes, the ministers or court counselors, the ladies of the palace, the provincial officials, or the common people suffer from diseases or other difficulties, they should also hang up 5 colored spiritual banners, light lamps, and keep them burning. Liberate living creatures. Strew flowers of various colors and burn precious incense. Then those people will be cured of their diseases and relieved of their difficulties. Then Ananda asks the Bodhisattva who rescues and liberates, "Good man, how can a life that has come to an end be prolonged?" The Bodhisattva who rescues and liberates answered, "Greatly virtuous one, did you not hear the Tathagata say that there are 9 kinds of untimely deaths? That is why people are exhorted to make life-prolonging banners and lamps, and to cultivate all kinds of blessings. Through such cultivation of blessings, they will be freed from sufferings and adversities for the rest of their lives." Commentary. The Kshatriya princes who are due to be anointed on the crowns of their heads will enjoy longer lives and good health, and they will be at ease and free from illnesses. Ananda, if the queens, the princes, the ministers or court counselors, the ladies of the palace, the provincial officials or the common people suffer from diseases or other difficulties, they should also hang up 5 colored spiritual banners. Light. 49. Lamps, and keep them burning. Before 7 statues of Medicine Master Buddha, as a way to make offerings to him, they should liberate living creatures that were destined for slaughter. They should also strew flowers of various colors as an offering to that Buddha, and burn precious incense, such as ola wood incense and chandana incense, especially incense of chandana wood from Mount Oxhead. Then those people will be cured of their diseases and relieved of their difficulties. Then Ananda, wishing to request more dharma on behalf of living beings, asked the Bodhisattva who rescues and liberates, "Good man, how can a life that has come to an end be prolonged? How is it possible that a dying person can extend his life and become healthy again? What's the principle behind this? I don't understand." The Bodhisattva who rescues and liberates answered, "Greatly virtuous one, did you not hear the Tathagata say that there are 9 kinds of untimely deaths? Haven't you heard the Buddha explain that there are 9 kinds of deaths caused by accidents and disasters? Since you have heard it, you will know that. That is why, in the Buddhist sutras, all people are exhorted to make life prolonging 5 colored spiritual banners and 49 life-prolonging spiritual lamps, and to cultivate all kinds of blessings through the merit and virtue of such cultivation of blessings, they will be freed from sufferings and adversities for the rest of their lives. They will not meet with the 9 kinds of untimely deaths. Sutra. Ananda asked, "What are the 9 kinds of untimely deaths?" The Bodhisattva who rescues and liberates said, "There may be living beings who, although not seriously ill, have neither medicine nor a doctor to treat them, or else they meet a doctor who gives them the wrong medicine. Consequently, they meet with an untimely death. Some of them believe in worldly cults, whose deviant teachers frighten them with false prophecies. Unable to set their minds at ease, they consult oracles to find out what calamities are in store for them. In order to propitiate the spirits, they kill various creatures. They pray to Wang Liang ghosts for aid and protection. Although they wish to prolong their lives, their efforts are to no avail. They deludedly hold to wrong beliefs and perverse views. Thus, they meet with untimely deaths and fall into the hells, never to come out. This is the first kind of untimely death." Commentary. After Ananda heard the Bodhisattva's answer, he said, "Although I have heard this before, will you please explain it for me again in greater detail? That way, living beings of the future can also listen to the explanation." He asked, "What are the 9 kinds of untimely deaths?" The Bodhisattva who rescues and liberates said, "There may be living beings who, although not seriously ill, suffering from only a slight cold, a cough, or some other minor ailment, have neither medicine nor a doctor to treat them, or else they meet a doctor who gives them the wrong medicine. Consequently, they meet with an untimely death. Perhaps their doctor turns out to be a quack who cures them to death by prescribing the wrong medicine. Maybe the doctor prescribes eye medication for a stomach ache, or headache pills for a sore throat. Or perhaps he gives them the wrong injection or performs the wrong operation, so they end up dying earlier than they were supposed to. Some of them believe in worldly cults, whose deviant teachers frighten them with false prophecies. The leaders of such deviant cults are actually demons, ghosts, and goblins who try to alarm people, making false predictions such as, 'You'd better not go out for 100 days or you might have a car accident.' 'Your husband is fooling around on the side, did you know that?' They turn people into nervous wrecks and then tell them, 'If you pay me $200,000, I can get you out of trouble.' Unable to set their minds at ease, they consult oracles to find out what calamities are in store for them. These people consult fortune tellers. 'Please take a look at my fortune. Are there any troubles in store for me?' 'No problem. $300, please,' says the fortune teller. 300 dollars and your problems will be solved.' In order to propitiate the spirits, they kill various creatures. The fortune teller says, 'Make a sacrifice of a cat or 7 rats, and then I'll report your meritorious deeds to King Yama, and he'll pardon your offense.' They pray to Wang Liang ghosts for aid and protection. People pray to ox-headed and horse-faced ghosts. The Li, Mei and Wangliang for protection and longevity, but actually these ghosts protect them by causing them to die sooner. Although they wish to prolong their lives, their efforts are to no avail. Their prayers to these ghosts are in vain. They deludedly hold to wrong beliefs and perverse views. This is nothing but superstition. They are confused and extremely stupid with no wisdom at all. Thus, they meet with untimely deaths and fall into the hells, never to come out. They had hoped to live longer, but they only hastened their death. After they die, they will fall into the hells forever because of their extremely deviant beliefs and their wish to lengthen their lives at the expense of others. This is the first kind of untimely death. Sutra. The second kind of untimely death is to be executed at the hands of the law. The third kind is to hunt for sport, to indulge in drinking and lust, or to become excessively dissipated, and then be waylaid by non-human beings that rob one's essence and energy. The fourth is to be burned to death. The fifth is to drown. The sixth is to be devoured by wild beasts. The seventh is to fall from a steep cliff. The eighth is to be harmed by poison, voodoo, evil mantras, or corpse-raising ghosts. The ninth is to die from hunger and thirst. These are the nine kinds of untimely deaths, generally spoken of by the Tathagata. There are also innumerable other kinds which cannot all be spoken of here. Commentary. The second untimely kind of death is to be executed at the hands of the law. Law enforcement officials may arrest you without bothering to determine whether the charges against you are true. You are killed regardless of whether you committed the crime. This is a kind of retribution. The third kind is to hunt for sport. Hunters shoot down deer, birds, or other animals for sport, treating animals as playthings. Some people indulge in drinking and lust, being promiscuous and not following the rules of propriety. People who drive while intoxicated risk losing their lives in a car accident, which is also a kind of untimely death. Or one may become excessively dissipated, so that unable to restrain oneself, one steps beyond the bounds of proper behavior. And then one is waylaid by non-human beings that rob one's essence and energy. These non-human beings, which refer to Li, Mei, and Wangliang ghosts, goblins, demons, sprites of the hills and rivers, and other weird beings, consume people's essence and energy as if they were eating vitamins. These unruly and unprincipled beings deprive others of essence and energy in order to prolong their own lives. This is the third kind of untimely death. The fourth is to be burned to death in a great blaze. Perhaps one's house is set on fire. The fifth is to drown. The sixth is to be devoured by wild beasts. One might be torn to pieces by wolves, tigers, or crocodiles, bitten by a snake, or swallowed by a whale. The seventh is to fall from a steep cliff and be dashed to pieces on the rocks below. The eighth is to be harmed by poison, voodoo, evil mantras, or corpse-raising ghosts. There is a practice of witchcraft in which someone makes a straw doll containing a slip of paper with the victim's time and date of birth inside it, and then shoots arrows at the doll for 100 days, after which time the victim dies. There are evil mantras that can be used to cause the victim to go crazy and try to commit suicide. There are also mantras that cause ghosts to raise corpses and make them walk at night. In the eighth kind of untimely death, one is killed by poison, hexes, secret mantras, and so forth. The ninth is to die of hunger and thirst. Some people suffer from thirst or starvation and eventually die of it. These are the nine kinds of untimely deaths, generally spoken of by the Tathagata. There are also innumerable other kinds which cannot all be spoken of here. If one were to go into all the other kinds of accidents and disasters, there would be no end. It would be difficult to explain them all. Many people in this world undergo the nine kinds of untimely deaths because they were not careful to plant good causes. For example, someone may take the wrong medicine in this life because he poisoned someone in a previous life. If one planted the evil cause of cheating others in a past life, one may die from taking the wrong medicine, receiving the wrong shot, getting the wrong surgery, or some other accident in this life. The second kind of untimely death is to be executed at the hands of the law. The law is supposed to be fair and just, but sometimes people are condemned and put to death without any justifiable grounds. The third kind of death involves hunting. When hunters go into the woods, the birds and beasts know that their lives are in peril, but they cannot escape. How can we witness their cruel deaths and still consider hunting a sport? How can we justify taking other creatures' lives for our own amusement? When people indulge in drinking and debauchery, their natures become confused. At that point, non-human beings are attracted to them and rob them of their essence and energy, stealing their gasoline. In the fourth kind, one is roasted alive because one enjoyed barbecued and roast meat in past lives. If you barbecue others, others will barbecue you. The fifth kind of death is by drowning, which is the retribution for having drowned beings in past lives. For instance, you may have drowned ants. Maybe I, this tiny ant, drowned in the past because of you. As retribution for drowning others, you get to put yourself in their shoes. You swallow a lot of water until your belly is bloated like a drum, and then you die. The sixth kind of untimely death is to be devoured by wild beasts. Such is the retribution for cruel-hearted connoisseurs of such delicacies as fruit foxes, monkeys' brains, bear's paws scorched in the fire, or live fish that are still flopping around. These gourmets ate such beings with great relish, so now animals devour their flesh, commenting, delicious, your flesh is quite tasty and your blood isn't bad either. The animals fight over the gourmet's flesh, making a feast out of them. The seventh kind of death is to fall over a cliff, which may be a retribution for having robbed others in past lives. Perhaps you found that stealing a person's wallet wasn't enough, so you pushed him over a cliff. I had some classmates who were pushed over a cliff during their school days. Luckily for them, they believed in the Buddha, and so they didn't fall all the way down and were able to climb back up. The eighth kind is death by poisoning, voodoo, evil mantras, or corpse-raging ghosts. Those who plotted to poison others or control them with hexes in previous lives are themselves poisoned or hexed in this life. As is the cause, so will be the effect. Each kind of karma brings its corresponding retribution. In the practice of witchcraft, a doll is used to represent the victim. The doll may contain a strand of the victim's hair, a piece of their fingernail, or a paper with their birth date. It may be shot at with arrows, set on fire, or buried, symbolizing the manner of death of the victim. As for corpse-raising ghosts, those who employ mantras to make the ghosts raise corpses may say, "Tonight, you must walk 100 miles. I'll be waiting for you at such and such a place." Then, controlled by the mantra, the corpse obediently walks just like a live person for 100 miles. The ninth kind is death from hunger, thirst, cold, or heat. In times of famine, starving people laugh hysterically as if saying, "Do you see me? I'm suffering the retribution for having starved living beings in the past. Don't follow my example." The law of cause and effect is never off in the slightest. There is nothing unfair about accidental deaths. They are simply retribution for past bad karma, as determined by the law of cause and effect. Sutra. Moreover, Ananda, King Yama keeps track of the karmic records of all the inhabitants of the world. If there are beings who are not filial to their parents, who commit the 5 rebellious acts, who reviled the triple jewel, who destroy the laws of the country, or who violate the precept of truthfulness, then Yama, the king of justice, examines and punishes them according to the severity of their offenses. Therefore, I encourage people to light lamps and make banners, to liberate beings and cultivate blessings so that they can overcome sufferings and perils and forestall all disasters. At that time, 12 great Yaksha generals were present in the assembly. They were General Kumbhira, General Vajra, General Mihira, General Andira, General Anila, General Sandira, General Indra, General Padra, General Makura, General Kinnara, General Katura, General Vikarala. These 12 great Yaksha generals, each with a retinue of 7,000 Yakshas, simultaneously raised their voices and addressed the Buddha, world-honored one, "Today, by relying on the Buddha's awesome power, we are able to hear the name of the world-honored one, Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata. As a result, we are no longer afraid of the evil destinies. All of us are of one mind to take refuge with the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha to the end of our lives. We vow to support all living beings and to benefit them so that they may live in peace and happiness. In whatever cities, villages, countries, or secluded forests this sutra circulates, or wherever people accept and uphold the name of Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata, and venerate and make offerings to him, we, together with our retinues, will guard and protect them, deliver them from all distress, and fulfill all their wishes. If a person wishes to dispel illnesses and difficulties, he should read or recite this sutra and tie a 5-colored thread into knots, forming the letters of our names. He should untie the knots when his wishes have been fulfilled. Commentary. Moreover, Ananda, King Yama keeps track of the karmic records of all the inhabitants of the world. Both in the realm of the living and those in the underworld. If there are beings who are not filial to their parents, who commit the 10 evil deeds and fail to practice the 10 good deeds, or who commit the 5 rebellious acts, the 5 rebellious acts are 1. Killing one's father. 2. Killing one's mother. 3. Killing one's teacher, acharya. 4. Destroying the harmony of the sangha. 5. Shedding the Buddha's blood. Now that you know that killing your teacher is a rebellious act, I'm sure none of you will dare to murder me. Sometimes the 3rd rebellious act is listed as killing an arhat. The arhat is just one's teacher. If the members of the sangha have been dwelling peacefully and happily in the monastery, but you go there and break them up, then you are destroying the harmony of the sangha. Shedding the Buddha's blood includes destroying statues and images of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. If you break a statue of the Buddha, and it wasn't an accident, you are also shedding the Buddha's blood. If you didn't mean to break it, then it doesn't count as a rebellious act, so don't panic and think you're going to fall into the hells. Who revile the triple jewel? People may slander the triple jewel, saying, "The Buddha was superstitious, and so are his followers. The members of the Sangha do not really cultivate or hold the precepts. Don't believe in the sutras. They are inauthentic texts." Who destroy the laws of the country or who violate the precept of truthfulness. Some people encourage others to lie and break the precepts. Why be honest if you can cheat and get away with it? Go ahead. Then Yama, the king of justice, examines and punishes them according to the severity of their offenses. King Yama verifies that they really committed those offenses, and then he punishes them. Therefore, I encourage people to light 49 lamps and make long life banners to liberate various kinds of beings and cultivate all kinds of blessings so that they can overcome sufferings and perils and forestall all disasters. At that time, 12 great Yaksha generals, great generals among the speedy ghosts, were present in the Dharma assembly. They were General Kumbhira, General Vajra, General Mihira, General Andira, General Anila, General Sandira, General Indra, General Padra, General Makura, General Kinnara, General Kachara, and General Vikarala. These 12 great Yaksha generals, each with a retinue of 7,000 yakshas. At their command, simultaneously raise their voices and address the Buddha. World-honored one, today, by relying on the Buddha's awesome power, which has drawn us to this Dharma assembly, we are able to hear the name of the world-honored one, Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata. As a result, we are no longer afraid of falling into the three evil destinies. All of us are of one mind to take refuge with the triple jewel, with the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha to the end of our lives. We vow to support all beings and to benefit them. We will teach and benefit them without asking for any reward. We wish to bring abundant benefit to them so that they may live in peace and happiness. In whatever cities, villages, countries, or secluded forests, this sutra circulates, or wherever people accept and uphold and recite the name of Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata and venerate and make offerings to him, we, together with our retinues, will guard and protect them, deliver them from all distress, and fulfill all their wishes. If a person wishes to dispel illnesses and difficulties, he should read or recite this sutra. The Sutra of the Merit and Virtue of the Past Vows of Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata, and tie a five-colored thread into knots, forming the letters of our names. He should untie the knots when his wishes have been fulfilled. This is a kind of mantric dharma. Mantras do not necessarily belong to the esoteric school. The practitioners of the esoteric school deliberately gave themselves such a name, making it seem as if they were very mysterious. Mantras are a kind of oath or vow, a kind of prayer. A five-colored thread symbolizes the five directions, each of which has a demon associated with it. When the five-colored thread is tied into knots, it brings stability to insecure places. The Yaksha generals made a vow that anyone who spelled out their names with knots tied in a five-colored thread would have their wishes fulfilled. Once that happens, he should untie the knots in order to release the spirits that were evoked. One should not be greedy and try to keep the Yaksha generals around after they have granted one's wish. Sutra. At that time, the world-honored one praised the great Yaksha generals, saying, "Good indeed, good indeed, mighty Yaksha generals, all of you who want to repay the kindness of the world-honored one, Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata, should always benefit beings and bring peace and happiness to them in this way." Commentary. At that time, after the Yaksha generals had vowed to support Medicine Master Buddha and to repay his kindness, the world-honored one, Shakyamuni Buddha, praised the great Yaksha generals, saying, "Good indeed, good indeed, mighty Yaksha generals. It is truly rare for you 12 Yaksha generals to bring forth such vows. All of you who want to repay the kindness of the world-honored one, Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata, Since the 12 of you have not forgotten that Buddha's kindness and wish to repay it, you should always benefit beings and bring peace and happiness to them in this way. Never forget your vows to enable living beings to leave suffering and attain bliss. Sutra. Then Ananda said to the Buddha, World-honored one, what should we call this teaching? How should we uphold it? The Buddha told Ananda, this teaching is called the merit and virtue of the past vows of Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata. It is also called 12 Spiritual General's Vows to use spiritual mantras to benefit living beings. It is also called eradicating all karmic obstacles. You should uphold it in this way. When the Bhagavan had finished speaking, all the bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, great hearers, kings, ministers, Brahmins, lay people, gods, dragons, yakshas, gandharvas, asuras, garudas, kinaras, mohoragas, humans and non-human beings, and all the great assembly, on hearing what the Buddha had said, were greatly delighted. They received it with faith and respectfully practiced it. Commentary. Then, after Shakyamuni Buddha had praised the 12 Yaksha generals, the venerable Ananda, whose name means rejoicing, said to the Buddha, World-honored one, what should we call this teaching? What should the title of this sutra be? What is this Dharma door? How should we uphold it? How should we receive, uphold, read, and recite this sutra? The Buddha compassionately told Ananda, this teaching, this sutra, is called the Sutra of the Merit and Virtue of the Past Vows of Medicine Master Vaidurya Light Tathagata. It is also called 12 Spiritual General's Vows to use spiritual mantras to benefit living beings. This sutra describes how the 12 Yaksha generals vow to benefit beings by using Medicine Master's true words for anointing the crown, to dispel all enmity, hatred, and retribution for evil deeds. It is also called eradicating all karmic obstacles. You should uphold it in this way. You should accept and uphold this sutra sincerely, for it can remove all karmic hindrances. When the Bhagavan, the Buddha, had finished speaking, all the bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, the great bodhisattvas among all the bodhisattvas, the great hearers, the great arhats who cultivated the Four Noble Truths of suffering, accumulation, cessation, and the way, the kings, ministers, Brahmins, lay people, possessing 10 kinds of virtue, the gods, dragons, yakshas, gandharvas, asuras, garudas, kinaras, mohoragas. These are the eightfold division of ghosts and spirits. humans and non-human beings and all the great assembly, on hearing what the Buddha had said, which was later set down as this sutra, were greatly delighted. Everyone was happy, and they received it with faith and respectfully practiced it. They had no doubts about the Dharma door that the Buddha had spoken, and they practiced it throughout their lives. This concludes the general explanation of the Sutra of the Merit and Virtue of the Past Vows of Medicine Master Vaidurya Light, Tathagata. Now, everyone should bring up their own opinions. Let's share our ideas and wisdom. You shouldn't only listen to me. Bring up your own ideas or any questions you have. Medicine Master Buddha, also known as Akshopya Buddha, and Amitabha Buddha are the two Buddhas in the East and the West, respectively. One heads the Vajra division and the other the Lotus division. The Vajra division represents the dharmas of subduing living beings by means of joy and giving. The Lotus division represents the dharmas of gathering in, which employ kindness and compassion to gather in all beings. Why is the Vajra division associated with joy and giving? When the Buddha subdues heavenly demons and externalists, he doesn't use anger. Rather, practicing joy and giving, he teaches living beings from the opposite side and causes them to renounce the deviant and return to the proper, so that they can end birth and death. He gathers them in with kindness and compassion, and subdues them with joy and giving. That's how the Buddha uses the four limitless minds, kindness, compassion, joy, and giving, to teach and transform living beings. Vajra spirits may appear to have fierce and angry eyes, yet in their hearts they practice joy and giving. Bodhisattvas keep their gazes down, which means that they don't get angry. Amitabha Buddha doesn't lose his temper at living beings, but always welcomes them with kindness and compassion. In the Daily Recitation Manual of the Chan School, the mantra of the two Buddhas says, "Two Buddhas proclaim and transform in the Saha world, Akshopya in the East, Amitabha in the West. If one transgresses any of the 13 major Parajika precepts and is afraid of King Yama, one should diligently repent and reform, and one's offense will be eradicated." Although such an offense is basically unpardonable, if you sincerely repent and reform, it can be eradicated. The mantra of the two Buddhas is one of the dharmas of hooking and summoning. When someone has a sickness caused by a ghost, this mantra can be used to summon the ghost. Although the mantra is very efficacious, very few people know how to recite it, and even fewer know how to really use it. There is also the Pu'an mantra, which is a subduing dharma. Patriarch Pu'an was a former butcher who gave up butchering to cultivate the way. He transformed his 12 butcher knives into flying knives. When the Pu'an mantra is recited, his butcher knives fly through the air and frighten all the demons and externalists. Medicine Master's true words for anointing the crown are also part of the mantra of the two Buddhas. These true words can neutralize all poisons and eradicate all offenses. If you sincerely recite them for a person who has been poisoned, it will neutralize the poison. But it won't work if you recite casually. This mantra is a very important part of the sutra. When you don't have time to recite the whole sutra, you can just recite the true words. It is a short but indispensable dharma. This sutra is also called the Sutra for Eradicating All Karmic Obstacles. Now that we have learned about this method of practice, we should constantly recite the Medicine Master Mantra so that we will be safe from disasters and so our good roots will grow. We should all take turns speaking the Dharma. I shouldn't be the only speaker. I would like to listen to all of you, especially the elders. Although this has not been done before in America, we should all advance in our study of Buddhism. We should all take turns lecturing and sharing our experiences so that everyone comes away with much more. Then we will be able to understand the inconceivable states of Buddhism. Don't be nervous. We're all one big family. Just be candid and talk about your experiences in the way place. Relax and feel at ease, and then you'll be able to perceive the wonders of the Buddha Dharma. This world is full of suffering and evil. In the Amitabha Sutra, it is called the evil world of the five turbidities. The five turbidities are the turbidity of the aeon, the turbidity of views, the turbidity of afflictions, the turbidity of living beings, and the turbidity of lifespans. The turbidity of the aeon refers to these impure, defiled times. Since time is defiled, space also becomes defiled, and there is air pollution. Breathing the polluted air, sentient beings become polluted as well. It's hard to keep things clean in such a polluted atmosphere. It's difficult to clean up the air, which is suffused with noxious vapors. The atmosphere is heavy and lifeless. There is no peace or happiness anywhere. The energies of violence, terror, murder, arson, robbery, and theft fill the air, poisoning people and causing them to go insane. The few sane ones who are left find no happiness either. Living in this world, they pass the days as if drunk or dreaming, not knowing what they are doing. The turbidity of views. Since space and time are polluted, what we see and hear is also unclean. We see people committing murders, setting fires, robbing or stealing from others, taking and dealing drugs, gambling, watching pornographic movies, and so on. These things pollute our views until we no longer know what is good. We get carried away by the depraved trends of the world. Then we become afflicted, thus bringing about the turbidity of afflictions. Nothing goes the way we wish. Every situation is aggravating. Seeing some people win fortunes at the casino and forgetting that there are always many more losers than winners, we start gambling as well. The more money we lose, the more we gamble, hoping to win it back. When we have squandered everything, that's when we really get afflicted. Perhaps we notice all the flourishing businesses and decide to start our own business. When our business loses money, we complain. All the other businesses are making a profit. God, why don't you help me out and let me make some money? Once we become afflicted, we gripe at everyone, including God. The more afflicted we become, the more troubles we have. What an unlucky life, we think. When God and the other deities don't respond to our complaints, we direct our anger towards living beings and stir up trouble in the community, bringing the turbidity of living beings into being. We end up having no affinities with people. our relationships with others are impure. As a result, our lives are disasters, and the turbidity of a lifespan comes right along. That's an explanation of the evil world of the five turbidities in worldly terms. The five turbidities bring us all kinds of troubles. Although we speak of five turbidities in general, each turbidity contains infinitely many turbidities, and we could never describe them all. The Buddha, seeing the endless sufferings, confusion, afflictions, and strife of beings in the Saha world, felt that life was totally meaningless. The Buddha had grown up in the royal palace as a crown prince of a king in an Indian state. One day, the young prince decided to go out the eastern gate of the palace, accompanied by his attendant. When they got outside, he saw a very strange sight, a woman giving birth, and as soon as the baby was born, it opened its mouth and bawled, "Kua, kua, kua." Ku means suffering in Chinese. "Why is the baby acting like that?" the prince asked. The attendant explained, "When birth occurs, the mother bleeds and the baby cries." The prince immediately lost interest in his walk. "This is no fun," he said. "Let's go back." And so the trip outside the eastern gate came to an end. After he returned home, he thought, "There was a crying baby at the eastern gate. Tomorrow I'll try the southern gate." The next day, he went out through the southern gate and saw an old man with wrinkled skin and white hair who walked with a faltering gait. His teeth had fallen out, his ears were going deaf, and his eyes could not see clearly. He was a pitiful sight. The prince asked his attendant, "What's wrong with him? How did he get this way?" The prince had never seen anyone like that before. His attendant replied, "That man is so old that his body doesn't help him out anymore. His eyes, ears, and nose have all failed him. Although his tongue still works, it's difficult to eat because he doesn't have any teeth and cannot chew his food. Every part of his body is on strike. His hands can't pick things up, and his legs can hardly support him. His hair is white, and his back is hunched." "What misery!" The prince changed his mind about taking a walk and went back. On the third day, the prince went out through the western gate. Coming upon a hospital, he walked in and saw many people lying in bed and crying out in agony. Appalled at the sight, the prince returned to the palace. The next day, he decided to take a look outside the northern gate. When he got there, he saw a mortuary where they also sold coffins. "What are those for?" he asked, pointing at the coffins. "For holding dead bodies," they told him. In the mortuary, the prince noticed a lot of people lying there with their eyes closed and not breathing. They were corpses. He was even more disillusioned than before. "What meaning is there in life if we have to undergo the sufferings of birth, old age, sickness, and death?" he wondered. At that point, the god Vaishravana, the heavenly king who guards the north, manifested as a bhikshu dressed in ragged robes. "Who is this?" asked the prince. "Why don't you ask him?" his attendant said. "What do you do?" the prince asked the monk. "I'm a bhikshu." "What do you do as a bhikshu?" "A bhikshu's goal is to put an end to the sufferings of birth, old age, sickness, and death," said the monk. "That sounds good to me," said the prince. "You say you can end birth and death? I would like to try it out, too." Then the prince left the home life and became a bhikshu. He renounced his kingdom and home and went into the Himalayas, where he cultivated ascetic practices for 6 years, eating only one sesame seed and one grain of wheat each day. In his quest for enlightenment, he suffered what others could not suffer, ate what others could not eat, and practiced what others could not practice. He bore what others could not bear, and yielded what others could not yield. He gave up the king's throne and withstood the hunger of eating only one sesame seed and one grain of wheat each day. With that kind of patience and renunciation, he realized Buddhahood. Even though he had been a crown prince, he wanted to cultivate the way. None of us are in such an honored position. What is there that we still can't bear to give up? Although we can't bear to renounce anything now, when it comes time to die, we won't be able to take anything with us. The prince renounced his kingdom, family, and external possessions and went to cultivate in the mountains. In the beginning, he was accompanied by 5 people, 2 trusted relatives on his father's side and 3 on his mother's side. His parents sent them not to prevent their son from cultivating, but to make sure he was safe from mishap. When the prince began eating 1 sesame seed and 1 grain of wheat a day, 2 of his 5 guardians couldn't take the suffering and left. The other 3 sincerely suffered along with him. The prince was reduced to skin and bones, yet he did not die. When a heavenly maiden offered him some porridge with milk, the prince accepted because he felt obligated to accept any sincere offering, and also because he was famished. When his 3 guardians saw this, they said, "Hey, how do you expect to become a Buddha that way? It takes bitter cultivation to realize Buddhahood, yet you're eating porridge. That's it. We're leaving." And so they also went away. The 5 guardians all went to the deer park. Think about it. Even with his merit and virtue, the future Buddha had to go through such ordeals. At that point, the prince brought forth the Bodhi resolve. When he was meditating in the mountains, he had probably taken an occasional stroll to enjoy the scenery. When his 5 guardians abandoned him, if he had been like most people, he would have thought, "I might as well return to the palace. What am I putting myself through all this suffering for?" Yet he didn't go back. Instead, he walked to the Bodhi tree and sat down beneath it, vowing, "If I don't become a Buddha, I will never rise from here. I will sit here till I die." After that, he sat in meditation for 7 weeks. We sit for 35 minutes and then cry out, "Aya, the pain in my legs is killing me." Yesterday, one of my disciples was sitting and meditating on the topic, "Be as if dead." However, he couldn't take it. The Buddha sat for 49 days without getting up or eating or drinking anything. Despite his hunger and thirst, he just kept sitting. Just think of the Buddha's vigor in cultivating the way. Would we be able to make such a great resolve for Bodhi?